Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter's nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Good evening, and welcome to ENN on a Thursday evening in New York City. We'll start off by saying, good evening to Michael.
FRFR, I don't know what that means. Oh, okay.
One more time.
FRFR, I don't know what that means. Oh, okay.
And good
evening. I'm 59, Peter. What do you want? I'm 59.
No, listen, I didn't call for it as a drop. I didn't expect it, but it was entertaining. And I'd like to say good evening to Don, please.
Who's Robert Moses?
What?
That's an iconic drop.
What?
Right. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Glad to hear it. We haven't really talked much about Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant today.
Oh, really?
You may remember that Kendrick Perkins, the former teammate of KD, has not been too kind to KD's current teammate, Kyrie Irving. In fact, we played this audio on the show yesterday from Perkins.
If you take Kyrie Irving's brain and put it in a bird right now, guess what that bird is going to do?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to fly backwards. Because Kyrie right now, he's confused. He's showing his lack of leadership. Here it is. Kyrie, you have been on these conference calls over the last 2 months. You're the vice president of the Players Association. You have been very involved in all this that has been taking place for us, whether or not we're going to play or not. And you have been on the phone and you have voted to play. And also, we go back last week. Just last week, he was reaching out to the Players Association and the NBA about, you know, players that are on the inactive list. Can they travel to Orlando? That he said he wanted to go to Orlando and be part of the team and be with his team and be a leader. And all of a sudden, within the next 7 days, because from what I was told, the NBA said, no, you can't go because of the pandemic and coronavirus situation, that the people, the bodies that are there are bodies that, you know, are that need to be people in place to, you know, take part in action.
So that was just one bit of it. But Kendrick's been going at Kyrie basically every single day. And
up and in.
Yeah, up and in, as Michael Kay says. And yesterday, the Instagram account for The Score posted a little IG post talking about Kendrick calling out Kyrie. And you know who's in the comments? Old Easy Money Sniper, Kevin Durant, who just commented, sellout. And then later on Twitter, reposted a highlight of Kendrick Perkins airballing a jump shot. I will say this. Someone put together a video highlight and said it was a Kendrick Perkins highlight mixtape. I'm not going to lie. I like Kendrick as a person. Good guy. And actually, you know, helped me win a championship, me personally, in Boston. But this low-light video, I haven't laughed out loud at a video in a very long time. It was tremendous how bad some of these highlights were. So anyways, in one sense, Michael, I feel like it's good that KD is defending Kyrie. At least you see a little bit of camaraderie there.
Sure.
And I'm also not going to lie. Perkins has some validity to what he says, but he does go extremely hard at people once they get in his crosshairs.
Is that just him new to media trying to, like, Rex Ryan it up a little bit? Say
he's been doing that for
things?
I think Rex Ryan's almost Kendrick Perkinsing it up. Like, he's been doing this. Like, you know, he started getting traction when he's, because Kendrick can just talk basketball with you and talk, you know, really in depth about play. But he really started getting the traction on TV when he started going up and in on people. And the Kyrie stuff, obviously he's getting information from somewhere, but it's all pretty harsh.
But it just seems a little over the top. Like, you can criticize him. We've criticized him. But, you know, if you put his brain in a bird, the bird would fly backwards. I mean,
that's strong.
That's very, very strong.
Well, you know what? That's how you keep a job now. Hot takes. Everything's about hot takes. So he's not pulling any punches. He's not going to make any friends. And, you know, you might think, well, that's a cheap shot by KD. But KD is friends really close with Kyrie, and it's his teammate. So I think it's cool that he backed him up. I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with Perkins, but Durant did what he had to do. That's his teammate and his friend.
You're right. At the end of the day, if you're a Net fan right now, you feel pretty good.
Yeah, you want them sticking up for each other.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's the one upside I see to this. So, more to the Mike Gundy files. He spoke on ESPN Plus and went into more depth about his wearing the OAN T-shirt.
I didn't know that some of the stances they had taken. I didn't know that. But then you look at it and say, okay, I was a dumb. I put the shirt on not knowing enough about the shirt. I understood exactly why the players got frustrated when they found that out or whatever, however they found out what it was. I didn't know. I didn't know till the next day. Well, I knew that night, but I didn't confirm it till I did a little research. And I was like, what a dumb. So that was my fault. The way the players feel about me and I upset them and broke their heart, that bothered me more than losing games. And that's the truth. But that's why now, as humans, when we make mistakes, the only thing we can do is admit we're wrong, own up to it, be humble, accept critical people, criticism, make it better, and move forward.
Unbelievable. Well, first, if you are such a dedicated watcher of One America Network, how do you not know what their stance is on this? He has talked openly about how he loves the network because they're right down the middle. They don't give opinions. How could he watch a significant amount of time and not know exactly what they stand for? He's full of it. I don't even know the guy. He's full of it.
Here's the problem, okay? We're not talking about a major network, all right? You really got to hunt to find this thing. I mean, you know it exists because you share those views and people probably turned you on to the station. And if you watch it, I'm telling you, for 30 seconds, you know exactly what it's about. Again, if you have those feelings, that's great. If you lean that way politically, I'm not killing you. I'm just saying don't all of a sudden plead ignorance. It's not like you stumbled upon, I don't know, some place that you shop and you didn't know that they donated money to a certain thing or whatever. This is pretty known, Michael. You don't stumble upon this. I had no idea it existed until like 2 months ago. And then I went to see if it was even on my cable, and it was. I watched it for like 5 minutes, and I knew everything I needed to know.
Hmm. Well, one thing that I think has been really bad for this country is that they watch the network that tells them what they want to know. But I don't think that people realize the difference. Let's bring it to a newspaper term, between a news story and a columnist. All right, so when I was at the Daily News, I wrote the Yankee stories, and I told you what happened in the game or what stories were breaking, what was happening behind the scenes. Mike Lupica gave his opinion on that. When you watch MSNBC or Fox, starting at 8 o'clock, the people that have their shows, they're doing columns. They're telling you their opinion. They're not necessarily telling you facts. They do find facts that could back up their opinion, but whether it be Maddow or Carlson or Hannity, those are columns. And people in this country are watching those shows, and they're saying these are news shows. They're not news. They're columns. Those people that have those shows are giving their opinion. Don Lemon gives his opinion. Chris Cuomo gives his opinion. Hannity gives his opinion. Opinion is not fact.
People decipher in between that on the same channels is like impossible.
It's unbelievable. It's so distressing. It really is.
Then you put on top of it him wearing the shirt would suggest that
he knows exactly what they're about.
Not only somebody that like stumbled upon that, watched it for 5 minutes, didn't know that he's a fan of that.
This guy is bulletproof in Oklahoma State. That's it. He's bulletproof. He can do anything he wants to, and he's not getting fired because they don't think they'll ever get anybody better than him.
Well, Chuba Hubbard, his star player, who was in the center of this whole thing, was on First Take, and he was asked, how do other players on OK State feel about Gundy?
Well, first off, I'll say, you know, I can't answer for other people. You know, my teammates, everyone feels differently about him.
You.
And I can't answer for them. For me, me and Coach Gundy's relationship, it's a work in progress. He's admitted to his faults and he's trying to move forward. And for me, you know, I see that as, you know, a positive first step.
Imagine a 21-year-old. Oklahoma State leaves a 21-year-old to call this guy to task. They should be ashamed of themselves. They haven't said a word. The school hasn't said a word.
And the kid's out there on his own.
This kid, 21 years old, is out on his own. He should tell them, I'm leaving this program. He gained 2,000 yards on the ground last year. He could go anywhere right now. And I dare the NCAA to say that he has to sit out a year. He should say, I'm done with this place. I don't like what it's about. Instead, he's the one holding Mike Gundy to task. That's disgraceful. Disgraceful on Oklahoma State's part.
Doesn't quite end there when it comes to the Mike Gundy saga, though, because a former Colorado player who played in a game against Oklahoma State when Gundy was a player on the team has retold a story from their 1989 game in which he says, Gundy called him the N-word and also said that he has 20 other ex-teammates who can vouch for his story and simply said he wants Gundy to apologize to show some growth over the years. Gundy previously, in the aftermath of the game, denied ever saying it.
I have breaking news, by the way.
Really? Real breaking news?
Yeah. Mike Gundy, I heard, is filing an official request with the government to change his middle name to Van, because he feels if he is Mike Van Gundy, they'll know he's one of the good Van Gundy brothers. Now leave him alone.
You can't. If you're Jeff, you just can't do it.
You can't allow that. And if he did that, then Jeff and Stan should remove the Van.
I don't want to speak on behalf of Jeff and Stan, but based on what I've heard about them, I don't know if they're on the same page as old Mike Gundy.
As they say, P-R-O-L-L-Y, probably not.
That's right. F-R-F-R, you know what I'm saying?
For real, for real.
I didn't know it either, Michael. Don't feel bad.
I just see it a lot, too often. It's a stupid... I'm not into it.
It does save characters, though.
If you feel like you have to say F-R-F-R.
Right.
Why not just F-R? Why twice?
Because you really want to bang it home.
Well,
real,
the saying is for real, for real.
Where'd that come from? What's the origins of that?
The oranges?
The origins of that.
For real, for real has... For real, for real. Not for real, for real.
Now, I don't know how familiar you are with Florida, Peter.
Oh, I know it like the back of my
hand. So, Bobby Marks, a former GM of the Nets, just tweeted out that Orange County, Florida, is that Orlando?
I believe
Orange County, it is?
I believe.
Has mandated that everyone must now wear a mask in public.
Okay.
No, they're going the right direction.
April called.
And California actually did,
Orange
too.
County. It's Orange County.
What did you say, Don? Who called?
I said early April called.
Said welcome aboard?
Yeah.
I bought airfare yesterday, guys.
No.
To go where?
I did. Well, I don't know if I'm going to use it, but I bought it to go to L.A. in late July for my birthday. The question:
Every birthday on the East Coast?
What did you say?
You can't. Your birthday is not celebrated on the East Coast.
He loves himself some L.A., Michael. He's such an L.A. guy.
I do love L.A. and I have good friends there. And
you know, ESPN has a station there. If you want to change venue,
is that what you want?
No, I don't want it. I'd miss you tremendously, and the show would too, and our listeners.
No, I don't want to move to Los Angeles, but I would one day like to have a place there. It would be nice, but I just want to get my... Here's my thought. So two things. I'm going to give everyone some valuable information because it's the kind of guy that I am. JetBlue, until the end of the month, which
is
another...
They're paying you to go to L.A.
No, it's another 12 days to you and me. If you buy airfare over the next 12 days from JetBlue... No change fee whenever you decide to use it if you cancel.
Okay, then that makes sense.
So the way I looked at it was, buy the tickets. If I don't use them, then I just have like a gift card to JetBlue. So I'll use it another time. Now, Michael, here's the part you're really going to respect. Went ahead and bought first class tickets. First time ever in my life.
Well, I mean, JetBlue is just extra room at the legs, right?
No. Not JFK to LAX. JFK to LAX is proper first class. Proper.
Now, I wonder, see...
But prices are way down, so I figured for the extra space, because if I'm freaked out about flying, I want the most separated seat possible, so I'll splurge, and then if I don't use it, I'll just spend it another time.
I would like to talk to the people out there, because there are people out there. I have to fly first class. Not for
because you are first class.
And I want to meet the people out there that fly first class so they could be treated like gold and get wine. The only reason I fly, I don't even eat, is the legroom.
Sully. Now, but what do you do? Okay, when you guys took your trip overseas a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
that you paid for it yourself out of your own pocket.
Right.
They don't even have like the TV like in the back of the seat.
Did you pay for first class?
Yeah, I have to.
Oh my God. Don, do you know the kind of money this guy's swimming
in? Yeah, that's
in?
A lot of money, Michael.
Listen,
can you imagine being on a long flight like that?
When
I sit in a regular seat, my knees are up around my chin.
I know, but I still have to download the app onto my computer. Listen, I understand your issue.
But at the
same
time,
a lot of money.
I mean, we're talking about greenbacks.
Now, but if you remember when I went to England with Jody, I bought first class going there, and the only flight that we could get back was not first class, and we sat in coach. And I don't know if I've ever been more miserable on a long flight like that.
I'm sure you're so fun to be with in that situation too.
I'm not fun to be with if it's a pull-out couch. I can't stand flying.
Now, real quick, did you guys travel with the children?
We traveled once with the kids on a JetBlue flight. And we didn't. There was no first class.
Okay, so the kids have not gotten first class.
No, that would not happen. They could sit alone
because I'll
not
tell you what,
first class on little kids.
Don, when I'm walking to my coach seat, which is usually what I'm doing 98% of the time,
right?
And you see those 2-3-year-olds in first. I'm not going to say I fantasized about opening the plane door and chucking the kid out, but it's crossed my mind.
Now, Rick DiPietro chimes in.
Here we go.
Save DiPietro!
He said, Peter can sleep comfortably in the overhead.
You know what? It's predictable. It's wrong.
And it's funny.
And it's also right.
My friend told me that Orlando is, in fact, in Orange County.
I already told you.
Marks brings that up. That's where the bubble's going to be.
I mean, this was established, Michael. This was known.
I looked it up and I said, confirmed, yes, Orange County, Orlando.
Sorry.
I'm going to skip the pixelation.
You want to skip the Jamal Adams?
I do have one update that Rich just tweeted out. The Jets have not granted permission for him to seek a trade, and they don't intend to trade him, according to sources.
Okay.
And Rich said, had a feeling this would turn ugly, and now it has.
Good for the Jets. Yes, I would skip. We've
covered
Jamal'd
it, right?
Up. Yeah. We're ready to move on.
Dr. Fauci says that football needs a bubble format for football to be played in 2020. This is an interview with CNN. He said they would need to emulate what the NBA and MLS are doing if they're going to try to have a 2020 season. Unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played. Now, Dr. Alan Sills, who's the NFL's chief medical officer, he spoke in response to Dr. Fauci about plans to keep players safe.
We're going to keep in very close contact with the public health authorities, and we're going to respond to the situation at that time. We're not just going to put our heads down and say, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to ignore all those realities. And I think you've seen that approach throughout. For example, with the NFL draft, we looked at that and said, okay, here's what we'd like to conduct. This is an event we'd like to do. How can we do that? And at the same time, still respect the current public health policies and adapt to what's being asked of everyone at this time. So we'll take that same approach whether we're in July or October or January. We have to monitor what's going on the pandemic overall. We have to stay in close working relationship with public health authorities. And again, we have to adapt football to the virus, not try to adapt the virus to football. And so that's the challenge, and that's what we're working very collaboratively with the NFL Players Association and with our infectious disease experts and others to try to do.
Well, we shall see. Guys, all of a sudden it feels like to me in the last few days, I don't know if it's just my own paranoia or the things I've read, it feels like football went from the most likely to be played to, in some ways, for me, the least likely to be played. The timing, which to me seemed like an advantage, maybe the timing's the worst.
Well, because we just I keep thinking back to how I felt when I left the office, when I left the studios on March 13th, of like, when was I going to see anybody again? How long was this going to last? I don't know the answer to that. But while being home doing these shows, I guess because football just felt so far away that maybe there was a part of me that felt, oh, man, by the time football plays, we'll know something more. There'll be some sort of medication that will make it difficult to die from it. Maybe we'll be closer to a vaccine. And now we're getting close. Camps are going to open soon, guys. It's June 18th, right? And we're a month away from camps opening up. First preseason game is like, you know, August 1st or whatever it is. I mean,
that's pretty close.
So now, based on what we've seen for the last 14 weeks, Peter, do we feel like we're on pace, that anything's going to be any different 6 weeks from now than they are right at this moment?
I mean, I got to tell you guys, with all these sports, I feel like I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, like, I need to see some training.
I need to see people wearing jerseys, doing something.
I think the NHL and the NBA seem feasible, right? If you look at the Rangers' Twitter, they're tweeting out pictures of some of the guys that have made it to Rye and are skating. You know, in Greenberg, excuse me. Panarin's there. Stahl is there. So it feels real to me because they're in the Ranger practice jersey. They're skating at the facility. So I think that can happen. But look at how it's going to happen. Something unprecedented. They're going to be on a campus, stuck someplace for maybe months at a time. Now baseball's just going to play it like nothing's going on? Play games at Yankee Stadium, then get on a bus, go to the airport, and fly to Milwaukee or wherever? That to me seems odd, right? Non-hub sports?
I believe that football we played, I just think they will plow through. That's just how they are. And they'll tell the players to do it, and the players will do it.
Well, listen, I've always suspected.
It would be very football.
It's very footballish.
Well, because
look at these players risk their lives every time they step on the field. They risk their lives. So this is no different.
Well, and let's not forget that Roger Goodell knows God personally. And the reason I know that is because of the Super Bowl in New York. Gorgeous
That's
day.
That's right.
Gorgeous. Eight inches of snow the next day. Next day. So he called up and said, listen, we've got, you know, football's playing, so do what you got to do. Thanks.
A lot of people don't know this, too. God also called incarcerated Bob and laid a big, big bet on the Broncos. Same day. First call was Goodell. Second call, incarcerated Bob. He doesn't call him incarcerated, though. He just calls him Bob.
My goodness.
Bob! The Knicks have been granted permission to talk to San Antonio assistant Will Hardy.
Why?
Well, they're looking for a new head coach.
Okay.
Hardy's a 31-year-old assistant for the Spurs. Also, they've been granted permission to talk to Greg Popovich's grandson, Larry. He's 7 years old. He's a 7-year-old boy. He plays second grade basketball, and the Knicks will be bringing him in.
How did you know that 7 years old essentially is second grade? It's amazing.
That's very good.
Well, I went to school.
I know, but I don't remember anything about it.
Kindergarten 5, first grade 6, second grade.
Now, how's Pop's coaching tree?
Let's look at the Pop coaching tree.
Because we know the Belichick coaching tree, not so good. How's Pop's?
Well, Budenholzer.
Well, right now, I think a couple of his the proteges people are excited about right now are there right now, right? Becky Hammon and Tim Duncan.
Mike Budenholzer has, you know, Milwaukee playing great. Sean Marks is a part of the tree. He's done a great job with the Nets.
Yeah, he's tree of Jays.
No, he's tree. He's not tree of Jays.
He's tree confirmed.
He played for them and was an assistant coach.
Oh, that's right. He was an assistant coach first. Brett Brown.
He's done well with the Sixers, although Andrew doesn't love him.
Not to be confused with Brendan Brown, by the way. You said Budenholzer. James Borrego is an assistant.
He's
so it's
good.
Not a thing. Like it's
No.
It's
Jim
not
Boylan,
a negative,
assistant in Chicago. Sure. Monty Williams. No. And then there's
Monty
Becky
Williams
Hammond.
Is a really respected coach.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Are you being serious or no?
No, I'm being very serious. He's really well respected. He's gone through a lot of personal anguish, too, in his life. So he's a good man.
So yeah, there is a pop tree, if you will. Now, and the NBA Coaches Union says the Orlando plan could severely jeopardize future jobs. The NBCA Executive Director Dan Fogel and President Rick Carlisle have concerns that several assistants and three head coaches, Mike D'Antoni in Houston, 69. Alvin Gentry in New Orleans, who's 65, and Pop, who's 71, could be restricted from their teams, and some could face considerable challenges in resuming their careers.
Let me ask you this. If you were the NBA and all three of those coaches signed a waiver and said, we're fine, if God forbid we get this and we die, no liability at all to the NBA, would you still let them do it?
No. It still looks awful. Even though there wouldn't be any litigation, it would still look awful. That you had them sign it. Because then, no. Don't you think that would look bad, Michael?
It would look awful. That's why I asked the question. Because obviously if somebody waives liability, okay, go do it. It's your life. But it would look terrible.
It would look terrible. Now,
but
is there a ways around this?
It would also look terrible to tell people they can't, you know, they can't work.
But you're doing it for the ultimate purpose, trying to save their lives, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
so
there are a lot of people
I'm
that are not
cool
working
that.
Now that are very unhappy that they're not working.
Like, oh, listen, I could live with telling Greg Popovich, I'm sorry, I'm not letting you coach, and him hating me and having the world hate me and him storming off just thinking that I'm the worst person in the world, than having him sign a waiver, letting him coach, and him dying. You know, right? Wouldn't you feel the same way?
I would probably tell them they can't, but boy, it would be very difficult to do.
By the way, Michael, I thought that's what you were alluding to when we talked about Monty Williams was his wife passing away in 2016 in that car accident.
Awful. The league just poured out.
Yeah.
But if you read the story, it's just you're crying as you're reading this long form story. I forget where it was. It was one of the magazines. I'm not quite sure what, but wow. To go through that.
And the league just completely, I mean, it's like he was so beloved, yep. And you could feel it when the way the league came out for him. And then in 2019, he ended up becoming the head coach of Phoenix. So he is another credit to the pop tree for sure. Novak Djokovic said he's very glad that the U.S. Open is happening. He said he thinks a lot of people were skeptical, especially for U.S. events, considering what the U.S. has been going through during the pandemic. So a lot of people were quite skeptical on whether it would happen. We're very glad that it's happening. And it's very important that we provide opportunities, we provide jobs, etc. So I guess Novak's in.
But last week he said he wasn't because he'd have to stay in the Queen's Hotel. Am I wrong? That was him, right?
No, wasn't it?
It was Djokovic
Nadal?
Lendl.
Nadal.
And Federer's already out.
And Federer got knee surgery, so he's not going to play. But it was definitely Djokovic who said, I can't go into Manhattan. I'm not going to do this.
So why would
Maybe
one...
Maybe you heard how excited Serena was and changed his mind.
I understand Serena, too. Not that you're putting your life at risk. I mean, she's like 39 years old. How many more majors is she going to have an opportunity to play in?
I don't think she could skip it. And also, really, how high risk is it for them?
It's probably not.
Like I don't think it'll be that scary for them. You'll be in a I'm sure a pretty secluded hotel with essential people, and you'll play at Arthur Ashe first of all those outdoor court, the entire tournament's outside, but
they can't close the Billie Jean King.
Right. Well, they can right. close Ashe, but they'll be fine. To me, that seems pretty low.
There's a beautiful, by the way, there's two where they're going to put them up. There's a beautiful Ramada right across from LaGuardia and a Motel 6, too. I would pay to see the top tennis players at a Ramada or Motel 6.
They actually announced that they're all going to the Ramada.
It's a beautiful hotel. It's got a great little club on the top, too.
Continental breakfast is delightful. not deleteful. Guys, on this day, sports history.
Rebound, Bosh, back out to Allen. His three-pointer, bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
Ray Allen. Yeah, what? And Ray Allen does it again, this time for the Heat.
I'm actually in the same place in my house right at this second where I was when he made that shot.
You remember it?
Yes. That's a
think about how that
shot
changed the arc of LeBron's career.
Oh, my God.
If they don't win that championship,
no.
The pressure is extraordinary because they'd already lost to the Mavericks. Oh, it would have been terrible.
It would
Ray
have
Allen
been.
Saved his bacon.
Yeah, that's every time you see Ray Allen, you got to show love if you're LeBron James. And that is a huge, huge moment. Also, on this day in 2000, Tiger Woods takes the 100th U.S. Open, winning by 15 strokes. At the time, it just absolutely shattered the margin of victory. The highest before that was 11. 15 strokes for the win. It's the largest margin in any major championship. You guys, I'm sure, remember this. It before that, in the British Open in 1862, you may recall Old Tom Morris. Think about it. His name was Old Tom Morris in 1862. Extremely old Tom Morris had the record right. of a 13-stroke win.
Is he still alive?
Old Tom?
Yeah.
No, he's dead Tom. And that'll do it for
that might have been somebody. He might have broke bread with George Washington.
1862.
It's not easy to eat bread with wooden teeth either.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.